And good morning, everyone. Welcome. Can you hear me?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, wonderful. All right, that's great. Then we'll start with our first case this morning, and that is Schneider National Leasing versus the United States. Mr. Fitzgerald, you're first.
Thank you, and may it please the court. Matt Fitzgerald on behalf of Schneider. This case presents two pure legal questions about the scope of the statutory safe harbor from the federal excise tax on new heavy truck tractors. First, the statute says that a truck is not manufactured, and thus there is no tax, quote, if the cost of repairs and modifications does not exceed 75% of the retail price of a comparable new article. Now, the statute on its face envisions that you can repair a wrecked truck. You can even change the transportation function of a truck. But so long as those modifications fall below 75% by price, there is no manufacturing and there is no tax. Now, it's notable especially that the statute sets this percentage at 75, which is a lot. So on its face, it seems to imagine that someone could, if we imagine a truck was composed of, say, 1,000 parts of roughly equal price, you could replace 750 maybe of those parts, scrap them, replace them with new parts, and drive on without ever paying the tax a second time on that truck. Now, the government's contrary view is oriented around the idea that it really matters, this intuitive idea of what is too much modification, and thus it really becomes manufacturing. But the statute answers that with the 75% mathematical number. And in fact, where is the dividing line between the intuitive line between what is really modifying something old and what is really manufacturing something new is an age-old philosophical question. Everyone will have a different answer. Presumably every IRS agent would have a different answer. The ancient Greeks have a philosophical paradox about it that asks when you have a new ship as you replace parts of a ship, and there is no good answer. The statute here cuts through all of that by providing a 75% mark that everyone can look to clearly. Now, the government's contrary view also is in conflict with that percentage, because if we embrace the idea that an IRS agent might say, well, these changes are too much, this is not modification anymore, this is really manufacturing, if that happens anywhere other than exactly at the 75% mark, then it conflicts with the 75% mark. So if it's at 60% or 55%, or 70%, the statute provides that up to 75% may be replaced without manufacturing and without the tax. Now, on the second issue, the 75% comparator is, quote, the retail price of a comparable new article. And properly viewed, the retail price is a reference to the open market retail price, not the unique price that was paid or that would have been paid by any individual unique taxpayer.
Mr. Fitzgerald, before you go any further with the second of the questions of statutory interpretation here, the first one, it seems to me, needs a little bit more amplification on what the statute means when it refers to repairs or modifications, because that's the trigger for the 75% calculus, right? This is in the nature of a definition of what constitutes manufacturing for purposes of the tax.
Yes, Your Honor.
And this safe harbor refers to repairs or modifications not counting as manufacture if the repairs or modifications do not exceed the 75% threshold. So we need to know what is meant in the context of this statutory scheme, because context is key to statutory interpretation. So we need to know what is meant by repair or manufacture in this context. So perhaps you could address that.
Certainly, Your Honor. So the term repair or modification, these are very broad terms. And together with the fact that the statute envisions a single article, it starts with an article and then it refers to the article. What those terms really just mean is alterations to that single truck. Modify has a broad definition. It means to alter. And so as long as you're talking about a truck, and so what we have here is a truck, an old truck where the tax was originally paid, and we brought it in, and then we made alterations to it using the glider kit.
Actually, what you did can more accurately be called stripping and scrapping rather than altering. And the question is whether stripping and scrapping constitutes a modification within the meaning of this statutory scheme.
Yes, it does, Your Honor, absolutely, because what virtually any refurbishing of an old and worn truck is going to involve taking off parts, maybe a lot of parts, scrapping those parts, replacing them with new parts, and then going on. And so really the key is...
That's not what happened here, though.
It is,
a factual matter, that's not what happened here.
It is, Your Honor, and I think maybe there's some distraction, at least I see it as a distraction, by the fact that the new parts for the truck arrived in the form of a glider kit. So a glider is nothing but a collection of truck parts. And the only reason, I think everyone, or at least the government here, sees the glider as the soul of a truck. And I think that's sort of the basis of this question too. But the glider is just a collection of parts. It arrives together in one piece because it's easier to ship that way than in crates. But there isn't any difference really between a glider and 10 large crates full of parts. So we bring in the old truck, we work on the truck, we take it all apart, we save the transmission, the drive shaft, the rear axles, the rear suspension, the fifth wheel, which is the thing that the trailer hooks to, often the fuel tank. This is a lot of the guts that are underneath of a truck. We use the glider parts, we combine that, and what we end up with is a refurbished truck. And the government's point legitimately is, well, at some point, that becomes manufacturing.
Actually, what you just described sounds more like manufacturing than modification.
Well, and in some instances, it is, Your Honor, because in some instances, it exceeds the 75% that the statute provides.
Well, take the 75% question out of it. I'm trying to get at the threshold question about what is a modification as distinct from manufacture.
Well, Your Honor, I think a modification as distinct from manufacture is anything that involves starting with a single existing truck and making changes to that truck. That would be modification.
But that's not what you're doing. You're not making changes to that truck. You're destroying it and creating something new. And this is aside from the metaphysical question that the Greeks were interested in.
Mr. Fitzgerald, couldn't a company under the parenthetical take a standard rig that's used for standard over-road transport at the end of its useful life and altogether remanufacture it to perform an entirely different function, to carry overloads, heavy loads, extra wide loads? We know that that can happen by the terms of the parenthetical, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes.
And if the rig that was modified was literally at the end of its useful life, wouldn't it be fair, at least at a colloquial level, to say, you manufactured a new truck here?
Well, yes, and I think at a colloquial...
Now, it's allowed under the safe harbor. But a lot of
right. People
could look at that scenario and say, you basically manufactured a new truck.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that's what the government is trying to do here. But the problem is the percentage, what did you spend on that refurbishment, is the key distinction between... It isn't what do we feel like looks and smells like a new truck. I mean, it may be that it's probably true that in any instance where you're replacing the cab and the frame rails, it's going to look like a new truck. It may feel like a new truck, but it is, respectfully, Your Honor, back to this metaphysical question. What is the modification of something old, even the substantial modification of something old? Where is the line between that and the manufacture of something new? And the statute solves it with that 75%. So I agree, Your Honor. So on the 75%, it is 75% of the retail price of a comparable new article. And the retail price starts with the ordinary plain meaning of that term. We would not say that a company who bypasses the regular distribution channels, who goes straight to the manufacturer and makes a custom order for 1,000 new trucks at a cost of millions of dollars, has paid, quote, the retail price for those trucks. And Schneider has not paid the retail price here. Yet the statute uses that term, the retail price, for good reason. It's good to have an objective number that both the government and private industry can look to ahead of time, say, what is the open market price? Okay, here's the truck blue book, and conform their behavior accordingly. And so it makes sense that the statute does that. I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal, if I may, if there are no further questions.
That's fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Rennie.
Good morning, Your Honors. In this case, the parties agree that Section 4052F Safe Harbor can apply where repairs and modifications are made to a single
Mr. Rennie, let me interrupt you because I think, let me ask you about this language in the statute. There's a lot of talk about manufacturing of a new truck, but who cares under the statute? Because the statute, the way I read the statute, it says an article described in Section 4051A shall not be treated as manufactured. So what does shall not be treated mean? Doesn't it mean who cares if it's manufactured? Because it shall not be treated as if it was manufactured. If repairs or modifications, if the cost of repairs or modifications does not exceed 75% of the retail price of a comparable new article. So does that language shall not be treated, does that mean anything in the statute?
We would agree that it does accept something that would otherwise be treated as manufactured.
What is that something? What's the exception? You said it would accept something that otherwise is manufactured. How do we determine what is that something? Do we just leave it up to the individual IRS agent in the particular case to determine whether or not that something should be exempted?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't think you have to do that. Here, our point is that there has to be a continuously existing single article. Article has a definition under the statute and regulations. For our purposes here, it's a self-propelled highway vehicle designed to tow a trailer.
What if it was wrecked?
A wrecked article can qualify in certain circumstances.
If it doesn't cost 75% or more than a comparable new vehicle, right?
Right. But again, we would suggest that there does have to be a continuously existing article, something that's identifiable at the beginning and end of the process. Now, the statute treats articles and components differently. Components, if they're reused, can reduce your tax base, but it doesn't wipe away your tax liability completely like the safe harbor does. In factual findings in this case that are not challenged on appeal, the district court found that the existing articles here were destroyed, and the only significant components that were reused in building the new glider track were the transmissions and rear axles. Two components are not the same thing as an article under the statute, so the safe harbor doesn't apply.
But what if the truck was wrecked? I guess I'm trying to distinguish between, because wrecked you know, I think of a wrecked article. I think of a truck going down I-65. It slides on the ice. It rolls into the ditch, and it rolls over. And, boy, it's totally unrecognizable, okay? And they tow it out of there, put it on a tow truck and tow it out of there, and they totally rebuild it. I would think that there you would have identifiable components that existed at the beginning or the end. But why is that not a single existing article, just like if you took a truck and rebuilt it with one of these glider kits? And who cares if it's a glider kit, by the way? If it's just, what if the parts all just came in one crate and then they were just reassembled? What difference does it make?
Sure, that's not necessarily determinative. We agree with that, Your Honor.
Say that again. I couldn't hear you.
We agree with that.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
It doesn't make a difference if it's a glider kit or separate box of parts or what have you. But we would submit that it doesn't really, regardless of the scenario, if it's change in function, if it's wrecked, if it's repair to extend the useful life, what we submit would be the way to view this is to look to see if the things that make it a self-propelled highway vehicle, the essence of it is preserved. And we think the best guidance on that is going back to when the IRS administratively adopted the safe harbor. There were these two technical advice memoranda that were issued shortly thereafter, but prior to its codification. In one instance, the IRS said the safe harbor did not apply. In the second instance, it did. In that first case, the taxpayer combined a glider kit with other new parts and salvage parts from two separate trucks. In that case, the safe harbor did not apply, and the salvage parts that were commingled were the engine, transmission, and tandem axles. In the second case, the taxpayer combined glider kits with the engines, transmissions, and axles of a particular tractor without intermingling them, such that they were essentially the same vehicles. That's what we think the safe harbor was all about. This is what it was in 1997 when Congress codified it. We don't think there's any reason to believe Congress intended to change it or intended for it to operate any differently in these circumstances.
Mr. Rennie, what do you think, what's your best answer to whether you think what Congress intended vis-a-vis Revenue Ruling 9127?
I think Congress approved of Revenue Ruling 9127. This is, there's no reason to believe that they thought there was some issue with it. Yes, they did expand the concept into these two other previously existing concepts of manufacturing, but there's no reason to think that Congress intended anything differently in terms of how Revenue Ruling 9127 operated.
And the expansion in part by picking up the wrecked component wrecked in the parenthetical?
Yes.
So in light of the parenthetical and the wrecked in modified allowance, how would you define what constitutes a repair or a modification? Where do you draw the line? In other words, if you take the hypothetical Judge Kirsch is asking you about with a wreck, or take my standard load to a wide load rig, and anything like that, you can come up with probably 25 more examples like that. Where do you draw the line?
Principally, we would suggest that it's not necessary to define repairs or modifications in this particular case. It doesn't really matter if you're which dictionary definition you're using, because our point is that it was originally conceived of to extend the useful life of an existing vehicle. That's what the universe we would be talking about here. The way they're interpreting it, you could almost replace a vehicle, as long as you have one at the beginning and one at the end. But replace isn't the same thing as repairing. But going back to your broader question about how this operates in these three separate instances, we think the principle is essentially the same as what I was discussing earlier in these technical advice memoranda, looking at the things that make it a self-propelled highway vehicle. And essentially, the powertrain is what are the major components that do that.
See, what's odd to me about your position, or what I find difficult, is a safe harbor by its terms is intended to provide territory within the code that a taxpayer can stand on with some certainty. And when you say, well, you know, I can tell you how it works here, but all these cases are going to be different and we got to look at it, I really can't give you a definition of repair or modification. That starts to work at odds with, in my view, what Congress is intending with the safe harbor. And in the tax code, to take statutory language and just say, well, I can't tell you what it means, you got to put a fact pattern in front of me. That seems odd.
We would accept their definition of alterations to a vehicle for these purposes. Our point is that in this case, we think it falls outside of that because you're not retaining the things that make it a self-propelled vehicle. But I would also point out that
you would be, in your view, in the situation where you have a rig that is wrecked as a result of a head-on collision, and the repair, you know, if you stipulate it meets the 75% test, the repair includes the use of a power glider kit and a new cab. In that situation, you'd say, well, that, you know, that fits within the statute, but, and it the thing was remade entirely. It was involved in a head-on collision.
We would suggest that it depends on what was retained. Is there enough
even in the face of the parenthetical? If somebody said, I meet it, it was wrecked, I'll show you the pictures, I'll give you the police reports, I'll give you everything. Yeah. And the commissioner agrees that the 75% test is met, you would take the position that the article somehow supersedes Congress's express reference to restoring a wrecked vehicle?
Our position is that the statute still requires an article as defined in Section 4051. Section 4051 article isn't a few components. So if you're just taking a few components off of the wrecked article.
No. In my example, it's the tractor is wrecked. It got in a head-on collision on Interstate 80. And it's been repaired, and it costs 73%. Or the retail price to repair it. Safe harbor or no safe harbor?
It depends on what was retained.
Isn't that the problem, though? It depends by who. So you've got an IRS agent that's going to come out and make that determination. The safe harbor is no safe harbor at all. Because you've basically taken, the IRS has said the 75% doesn't mean anything. Because an individual IRS agent can say, well, I've determined unilaterally that this is not the same article it was before, so whether it's under 75% or not makes no difference to me because this particular component is too important to replace in a wrecked vehicle.
Your Honor, we think that this statute came about to aid in situations like the Ruin Financial case, where this was really a question of the scale of repairs that were going on, or remanufacturing, breaking things down to their component parts, putting them back together. It does not contemplate this type of scenario where you really are just stripping a few components away.
Can I ask you, I know you're almost out of time here, but I want to ask you another question on a different subject. The end of the statute says if the cost of such repairs and modifications does not exceed 75% of the retail price of a comparable new article. Does the word cost and the phrase retail price mean the same thing? And if it does, why didn't Congress use the same term? Why didn't they use cost of such repairs if it's not 75% of the cost of a comparable new article? Or why didn't they say if the retail price of such component repairs and modifications does not exceed 75% of the retail price? It seems like they use different terms, and don't we have to give some purpose to that?
That is true, Your Honor. I think that is a reflection of the fact that price is used elsewhere in the statute, and there are definitions as to how that is adjusted and how that ties back into the first retail sale. And I believe that's what that reflects. A cost is used to parallel the fact that you're talking about cost of repairs. So that's what I would submit.
It doesn't seem to me a parallel to me at all. It seems like cost means what you pay. Retail price means what is charged. And I think of retail price, the thing that comes to mind is manufacturer suggested retail price. When I think of cost, it's what is it going to cost me out of pocket, discount or no discount?
Okay. We would submit here, though, that retail has a specific meaning and that what this statute is contemplating is the exact same analysis as what Schneider undertook in this case, which was to compare what they were going to pay to refurbish, so-called refurbishment process, versus what they would pay for the new tractors in comparison.
Can I ask you, it's a pretty detailed question, so excuse me, but I want to take advantage of your expertise here. How does 4052B and the statutory provision that speaks to the determination of price, in your judgment, inform the meaning of retail price as it's used in F1? Or does it not?
We think that it means the same thing throughout the statute. It essentially means a sale to an end user, which is what is contemplated in 4052A1 in the definition of first retail sale. And then these other provisions essentially all piggyback on that. And I know that Schneider has an argument that essentially we are saying that first retail, that retail price or retail always means the same, refers to first retail sale. That's not our argument.
See, I reacted to your brief. I thought you might be right on that. Okay. But when I tried to trace it through, okay, in other words, do a find on the word retail and then see if your proposition holds true. Where I get stuck is in B1-2, because retail there seems to contemplate, you know, sales in the ordinary course of trade. That's the way Congress seems to be using the term there. And that throws me off your premise, which I otherwise find quite attractive. Put differently, it seems that Congress is using retail in a lot of places as an adjective.
Right.
And the adjective is describing terms, you know, nouns whose meaning is going to differ.
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble following which provision you were talking about.
Sales not at arm's length. I don't mean to hold you up on this. I'm just not sure that you can trace retail through as you propose and hold its meaning constant.
Our point is that we think that is possible. We do submit that this essentially is, the point of this is to build back to an arm's length first retail sale to an end user.
Right, which is not going to contemplate a volume discount.
It could, though. There's nothing here that accepts a volume discount, where we see that Congress knew how to accept that type of thing if they wanted to.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Fitzgerald.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few points. So I heard the government say that it was willing to accept our definition of an alteration, the idea that a modification is an alteration, but that where they get hung up is two components are not equal to an article, and there must be a continuously existing article. The problem with that is it conflicts with the statute, because if the two components they're pointing to, the transmission and the rear axle, actually we saved a few more than that, significant ones including the drive train that connects the two and makes the truck go. But if two components aren't enough, would three or four or five be enough? And that's the question that gets back to what we're discussing. Three or four or five are going to be easily, at least in our case, within the 75% that the statute sets. There is a continuously existing article. Every every truck that comes in, it is going to be taken apart, even if you're going to replace, if you're going to replace 50% of it or 74% of it or 95% of it. It is a truck. It's going to come apart. It's going to look like a teardown. Many pieces are going to be scrapped. New pieces are going to be added, and the truck is going to go on. And again, these are old, worn-out trucks on which the tax has originally been paid when they were new. We are doing what the government said that this provision is looking for, which is extending the life, in this instance, of a worn-out truck. That's exactly what we're doing. That's what these are. Finally, ultimately, yes, retail throughout the statute in almost all of its uses means the ordinary everyday meaning of what we think of as retail, particularly phrases like retail price. It brings up the idea of an open market and the general market. Judge Scudder brought up earlier about B2, it's true that that phrase, the price for which similar articles are sold at retail in the ordinary course of trade, is bringing that price to the ordinary open market. And the retail price in F2 means essentially the same thing. If there are no further questions, I respectfully ask the court to reverse and remand, and I'll cede the rest of my time.
All right. Thank you very much. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.